Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what three ways could people get from the east coast of the United States to San Francisco before the Transcontinental Railroad was built? In the mid-19th century, gold was discovered in California, and tens of thousands of prospectors flooded into this remote area, hoping to strike it rich. Thousands of Jews were among them. The documentary film, American Jerusalem, Jews and the Making of San Francisco, which was named one of the top 10 films of 2013 by the San Francisco Chronicle, tells the story of the pioneering Jews of San Francisco. It traces their remarkable journey from Germany to the gold rush, their rise to prominence, and how, freed from discrimination, they reinvented themselves as a distinctly new kind of Jew. They weren't just American Jews, they were San Francisco Jews. This week we're speaking with Mark Schaefer, the American filmmaker who wrote and directed American Jerusalem.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Mark. The first thing I'd like to ask you is a little bit about your own background. How did you happen to get into filmmaking?
I began working at CBS News straight out of college, and that would have been the late 1980s. Always had an interest in film, but didn't study it formally. Worked with Charlie Rose, the American newscaster and interview host, on his interview program in the middle of the night on CBS, and over time grew into doing magazine shows and things like that where I had field experience. But I always liked doing long form. I always wanted to do long form. And in the mid-90s, I left and left CBS and went to work with a man named Hedrick Smith, who was a former New York Times foreign correspondent and Washington bureau chief, national deputy editor, and made documentaries with him for public television in the United States for several years, and then went out on my own and have been doing that ever since, essentially, mostly public affairs, current events type films.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the topic of this film and a little bit about the historical background. Can you tell us something about the Jews who settled in San Francisco and how they happened to end up there?
Yeah. The Jews who came to San Francisco were Central European Jews. There was a wave of immigration to the United States from Central Europe, Jewish and non-Jewish. These were the lands that eventually unified into a state of Germany in 1871. And the Jews came in very large numbers as part of that wave of migration. It was prompted by political repression in the states of Central Europe. And the Jews were particularly persecuted as a minority group in that region. So they came in disproportionately large numbers. About 250,000 Jews came from Central Europe to the United States between 1820 and 1870 or so, out of a total migration of about 7 million people. Most of those Jews settled in the East, like everybody, but when the Gold Rush occurred in 1849, they, along with others, came West in search of fortune, or some of them came west. Not a large number compared to the overall numbers that had come, but several thousand Jews came west for the gold rush in the 1849, 50, 51 time frame, and in the years that followed, continued to make their way west, like other immigrant groups prompted by the gold rush. Native-born Americans as well came west. San Francisco, before the gold rush, I didn't really understand this, but even though I grew up in Berkeley, and which is across the bay from San Francisco, home to the university there, I never really fully grasped just what a dramatic transformation occurred at the Gold Rush era. Before the discovery of gold, San Francisco was a Mexican-governed small village, a port town of several hundred people that had a large Spanish church and a Spanish presidio, a fort. And there wasn't much more there. It was extremely remote, no major cities anywhere in the American West. The American West was almost wholly undeveloped. And after the discovery of gold, within a couple of years, 35,000 people were there.
Let me ask you something about the Jews who went there. Did they go mostly as prospectors, or did they go as merchants and to, let's say, continue the types of work that they had done in the East, taking advantage of the fact that they knew that there was a big population growing there?
Some Jews went to the mines like other ethnic groups, but actually most Jews did pursue familiar trades, and mostly merchants. They came west and they set up shops. They sold tobacco. They sold the goods needed to mine. And so the most famous names that survive to this day got their start, almost all of them, as merchants of one kind or another. And the ones who were the most successful got their start that way. There's one very interesting case that we cover in the film. He's probably the person we spend most time profiling, named Adolf Sutro, who came from the German province of Prussia. At that time was a very large province that spanned the entire sort of breadth of the German lands east to west. So he actually was from a little town called Aachen, which is in the western part of that area. And he came west in 1850, hoping to make a fortune, and became a tobacco merchant, failed to amount to much selling tobacco, and eventually made his way to the Comstock Lode, which was a second massive gold and silver discovery east of San Francisco near the border of what's now Nevada. And he made a fortune off of a scheme to build a tunnel. It was an engineering idea of his to build a tunnel underneath the mines that were constructed vertically down inside a massive mountain chain. And so he ended up making his fortune off mining. But that was an exception. Most Jews came and they practiced what they knew. And it wasn't just from the East. This is what they were allowed to do in Europe. These are first-generation immigrants, almost all of them, who come from Central Europe and who in Central Europe were prevented from participating in farming, in fine craftsmanship. And so they did what they could, which was to peddle, and they were mostly peddlers. And so they had a long tradition of selling knickknacks and goods and things like this to survive. They were largely poor and marginalized. They came specifically, the ones who came to the U.S., came mostly from Bavaria, the southern German state. A second group that ended up migrating to San Francisco came from a state called Posen, which was on the border between what's now Poland and Germany. So those two regions made up the bulk of migrants that ended up in San Francisco, Jewish migrants. And especially in Bavaria, which we spend some time in the film, we learn and we go into the Nuremberg archives and we learn with an archivist, a Jewish museum official who takes us back into the stacks in this old library. She pulls out old books that were written, original copies, all the way back in 1813, showing laws that persecuted the Jews, that restricted their numbers, and that prevented them from certain professions. And so that context, that history, is what serves as the sort of foundation of what happens ultimately in San Francisco.
Now, these people who went out west, the Jews, were they mostly men or did they go with families? Can you talk a little bit about how the community itself was founded?
Sure. The overwhelming number of people who came west were male. San Francisco, I think, had a male-to-female proportion of something like 7-to-1, and many, many, many of the women who were there as prostitutes. It was not a family town, not compared to eastern cities. Remember, this was a very remote place. It was extremely difficult to get to and arduous. People literally died on the journey west. There were three ways to get west. You could go overland in a wagon train, very, very arduous, where you could fall prey to disease or even to Indian attacks, Native American attacks, or to other problems. You could lose your way, as the famous Donner Party did, which led to a famous catastrophe in the mountains of the Sierra Nevadas. You could take a ship from an East Coast port all the way around the southern tip of South America and back up, a grueling, arduous, awful trip. Or you could do what many of them did, which is stop halfway down at the isthmus of Central America, disembark your ship, and go overland through Panama, pick up another ship, and head north for the final passage up the Pacific coast to the harbor of San Francisco. None of these were easy trips, and it wasn't until 1869 that the Transcontinental Railroad was completed, so it was the only way to get there, and so mostly men went. The other thing is, there really wasn't any reason to go to San Francisco. People didn't go to San Francisco because they wanted to live there. They went to San Francisco because they wanted to take advantage of the gold rush. They wanted to get rich. And then they wanted to come back to wherever they came from. So there was no reason to bring a family, for that matter. Now, Jews ended up staying in San Francisco in much higher numbers, 2 to 1 versus other ethnic groups. But that helps explain why it was so heavily male. Another very important feature of the Jewish San Francisco experience is that it wasn't particularly religious, and the Jews who came to San Francisco were not particularly Orthodox. And one reason for that may be, I mean, there's several reasons that explain this, but one of them may be that it was really impossible to follow Jewish law on the journey west, given the nature of the journey. And so it would have been discouraging to people who felt compelled to do that in a very pure or, sacred way. So people who moved west were willing to sort of discard those traditions. And that feature really largely defines, I think, the public imagination when it thinks of San Francisco. It thinks of it as a place of fresh starts, new beginning, innovative thinking, rejection of sort of hidebound tradition, a place where people are free to be who they are or who they want to be. Those are the kinds of images I think certainly Americans, and I suspect the whole world, has of the San Francisco Bay Area. And those ideas, those realities really trace all the way back to the very, very beginning of when this became a city.
So then where did the women come from? If more Jews settled there than other ethnic groups, how did they settle? I mean, where did the families come from? Where did the women come from?
Well, eventually, after San Francisco emerged as more than just a mining village or a port entryway to the mines, and it built itself up into being a real city, the center of the American West, and people began making money, establishing themselves, and building a community, then more and more actual families made their way west. There was something to go to at this point, a place other than just a remote gold rush. It was a place that was a real city. And as people became successful, they called for friends, wives, and the like to come west. And so they followed. Some women came early in the process. Some families did migrate west as families. But as I said, those were rare. They were not the norm. So once the city became established, that more began to migrate there and settle. And because the Jews did not return as large a number, they tended to stay settled in the West, in part because they didn't have a lot of places to go back to. They were migrants from Central Europe. They had settled in the east of New York. They were not going back to Europe. Lots of immigrant groups who come to the United States harbor feelings that they would eventually return to their homelands. The Jews did not. And so they were, as we've always been, really on that historic search for a place to call home. And when they found San Francisco to be welcoming and inviting, many of them stayed.
So then at what point would you say there was actually a Jewish community, as we would think of a Jewish community?
Well, the Jews were there from the very, very beginning. You know, like everybody, in smaller numbers. The very first Passover was in 1849. By 1851, the community was large enough to gather and to start a temple. They gathered as a group in April of 1851, and this was the entire Jewish community of San Francisco at that point, which included both Bavarians and Posners, who did not like each other, did not get along due to historical divisions and ethnic prejudices. When I say ethnic, I mean sort of nationalist prejudices between Central and Eastern European Jews. They couldn't agree on a temple, and they split into two. And so there are two temples in San Francisco to this day that were born on the same day in April 1851, Sheriff Israel and Temple Emmanuel. One of those temples is for the Bavarians, or was designed for the Bavarians, and one of those temples was designed essentially for everybody else. So as early as 1851, you have temples. Even before that 1850 time frame, You have mutual aid societies that are built, two of them, the Eureka Benevolent Association and the Hebrew Benevolent Association. Again, the divide between the two groups. The Eureka Benevolent Society was built by Bavarian Jews to provide assistance to Bavarian Jews. The Hebrew Benevolent was built by Eastern European Jews to provide, well, when I say Eastern European, I mean Posners, who are sort of in between Germany and Poland, further east, but not all the way into Russia and places like that. And that's designed to provide aid to their brethren. So there was really this big divide between the Jews going all the way back, but it really as early as the very beginning, 1850, 1849, you're seeing the first evidence of a Jewish community emerge there.
Did these people rely at all on Jews from the East or Jews from Europe for certain necessities like rabbis? I'm thinking of the Frisco Kid, which is one of my favorite
movies. Yeah, exactly. Well, they famously had a difficulty getting rabbis to come all the way to San Francisco to serve. And so they had a hard time recruiting rabbis to work in San Francisco. And there's a really excellent book out there called The Cosmopolitans about Jewish San Francisco, in which this era is pretty thoroughly described. And they get into some of these issues of the early religious institutions and the challenges and some of the trends and tensions that are going on within the religious community of San Francisco. And there were some interesting things going on at that time. You know, the San Francisco Jews early embraced the Reform Judaism movement. They did not formally become, neither Sherith Israel or Temple Emmanuel did not formally declare themselves as Reform congregations until several years later, but both eventually did, and they both sort of subscribed to the Reform instincts of that movement. And at the same time, it's important to note, and this is a very sort of defining feature of the San Francisco Jewish experience, one that largely survives to this day, is that Jews who came west, as I mentioned before, were not particularly religious, comparatively speaking. And so membership in those temples was very, very low compared to the overall Jewish population. As one of our experts in the film that we interview says, the Jews of San Francisco were no less Jewish or no more Jewish than other Jews. They were different Jewish. And we like to say they were San Francisco Jews. And what that means is, you know, they really were early experimenters in secularism and in living in a multi-ethnic environment in which they were largely accepted. I mean, that was a very important defining feature of their experience, is that they did not encounter a very much anti-Semitism. I mean, so little of it that it's hard to even think of an example of it.
Yeah, that's
formal
really
example.
Important.
And there's one case that comes up, effort by in the 1850s by a legislator in California, early California, to pass a Sunday law in which all shops would have to be closed on Sunday, the Christian Sabbath. And that law was defeated. It was defeated in part because it would discriminate against Jews. And so that tells you all you need to know about the climate of the place for Jews and why they were so happy to be there. So San Francisco is really one of the very first places that I'm aware of, certainly in the United States, in the modern era, where Jews are not being treated as a marginalized group, where they're having to figure out who they are, when they can circulate among Gentiles, and when they can be successful and compete on an equal footing. And what that does to their identity and how that makes them confront what it means to be Jewish, all of that's very rich terrain that I think resonates to this day. It's obviously the big questions that many of us ask ourselves now.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how you went about making the film itself. Did you have any special difficulties?
Sure. The film was a delight to make. We had some interesting challenges as filmmakers. One of them was that photography from the 1850 time frame was still very, very young as a medium. And there was very, very few, there are very few photographs, good photographs of that time frame. And so we had to think of ways to bring to life this experience without being able to rely on actual photography of the period or exclusively on actual photography. So we employed a lot of animation in the film done by a gentleman named Drew Takahashi. It's beautiful stuff, a variety of different styles, but it's extremely artful And it's really more like art than what you think of as animation in a film. And I think that's one of maybe my favorite feature of the whole film. And sometimes, what's the saying, desperation is the father of invention. When I started, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to convey this story on a screen? By the end, the solution that we found is probably my favorite aesthetic element in the film. We also employed very, very impressionistic recreations, not actual literal efforts to create fictionalizations of moments, but things that could be used, a scene that we did in a famous historic home, a Jewish home in San Francisco called the Haas Lilienthal House, where we had a 1870s dinner party celebrated where people are eating oysters, and we recreated an early Christmas that the Jews, many of the successful Jews in San Francisco celebrated Christmas, began celebrating Christmas, getting again at that identity and assimilation idea, and using historic records and historic documents, recreated that, including a roast pig on the centerpiece of the table. So we had a lot of fun doing those kinds of things, and so those challenges are what filmmakers enjoy. It makes us exercise our creative muscles, and we certainly enjoy doing that in this case.
Could you tell us how our listeners can get to see this film?
Well, listeners in the United States can. The film is currently broadcasting on public television. As we go to air, many of the PBS stations have already aired it. But there are some screenings in May of 2014 that people can see. So that's the first thing to do if you're in the United States, is to check those things. If you happen to be in Canada, in the Toronto area, the film will be featured as part of the Toronto Jewish Film Festival between May 1st and May 11th. You can buy the film by going to our website. And if you click the button, Where to See, it lists many of the screenings that are still available, and there are several in May in the United States, and it also gives you a link to where you can buy the film. And the film is affordable for, if you're just buying it for home use, it's not very expensive to be able to purchase, but that's the easiest, it's $30. That's the easiest way for people outside the United States to get it.
Can you tell us what you're working on now and future plans?
Sure. Currently, I've gone from the Jews to the Arabs. I'm working on a documentary for Al Jazeera, the Qatari-run media network. It's an hour-long film that's going to come out probably in the summer, on a subject that I can't disclose at the moment, given the nature of the film. But sometime in the summer, that film will be ready to be broadcast internationally. And I've also got in the works a film that I'm developing with the executive producer of American Jerusalem, Jackie Krentzman, on the San Francisco photographer of the 1800s, Edward Muybridge. He's famous for having captured a horse in motion for the first time. Most people would recognize his work if they saw it online. If you put his name in a search engine, it'll pull up all sorts of images. And he has an incredibly rich and resonant story that very much helps us understand who we are today, given the work that he did in the 1800s. It's just a great story. And I first encountered him through the making of American Jerusalem, because as we looked for images of that time frame, his work was one of the sources of images we could use. We in the end, had looked at more than 1,000 images, and it was just extremely beautiful work and very, very powerful. And I got to know him through that experience, and he was just such a compelling figure. I felt moved to try to make a movie about him. So we're in the development phases of that as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda, for sharing our work.
If you would like to know more about this film, watch a trailer, and find out where it will be shown or how to order the DVD, please go to the link on this page. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with Hello San Francisco by American blues guitarist and singer Buddy Guy. See you next week.
Cause some of my good friends have told me that my baby was headed toward the Golden Gate. You know how hard she had a boyfriend, and this cat's name was Buddy Joe.